Everybody, I'm Beatty Cohen-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. Happy, happy, happy New Year to all of you. And you know, one of the things that I tell myself and I tell my patients every single day is that every day we have a new opportunity to begin again, knowing, of course, that we cannot change our history. We can't change anything that's happened even 10 or 30 seconds ago. So with this new year, I'm going to ask you a number of important questions. And number one is, are you really satisfied with your past year and with your life and your relationships? And I want you to really be honest with yourself. Are you satisfied? And if you're not, again, something to really ponder, what do you actually feel stands in the way of your happiness and your personal goals and your ability to really be able to experience a lot of joy? And if you are unsure, and if you've been unsure over the years, are you willing this year, 2022, to figure this out? And if and when you do discover the challenges, the things that have been getting in the way of your life and your relationships and your depression and your anxiety, are you actually willing to do the work? Because it's not just about thinking about what we're going to do. It is about putting things into action, into an action mode. So my question to you, of course, is now you know the challenges, are you willing once and for all to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as you can for this coming new year the things, perhaps even the people, that have helped to erode your life in some meaningful ways? And if your answer is yes, it's absolutely amazing the transformations, the positive transformations that can really happen in our lives. Well, for those of you who are actually tuning in for the very first time and you're wondering, who is Beatty Cohen-Fredos? Well, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. I'm an author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am also the advice columnist for Dan's newspapers in the Hamptons. So for those of you who live in the Hamptons and you're actually able to find the magazines, the hard cover magazines, you can read my Ask Beatty columns twice a month. And for those of you who don't live in the Hamptons and don't have access to the magazines, you're able to read the Ask Beatty columns online. So you can just go to Ask Beatty at Dan's newspapers and you will be able to hear my take on a variety of different subjects, dealing with, of course, mental health and relationships and sexuality. So what is this Ask Beatty show really all about? In fact, today I was counting the number of shows that I've actually done since 2013, and I think my count is correct. Today is the 470th Ask Beatty show that I have hosted here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I remember the very first show that I did was with Dr. Gary Null. So a number of years have gone by, and I want to thank you all for your comments and your calls and your emails and your texts. Because on this show, what is the show really all about? Well, the show is about empowerment. The show is about dealing with all of the things, issues that affect all of us that actually need to be dealt with, okay? Despite the stressors of life. And, you know, and I'm hoping that every single week that there is some little thing that I've said or some of my amazing guests that have said that will give you an aha moment. And you're going to say to yourself, yes, I am going to do this. I am, whatever this is, in terms of things that are really in your best interest. In fact, I've been doing some reading recently, just kind of looking at what the people who are living the longest around the world, what are some of the things that they are actually doing, not just talking about. And I've actually been committed to trying to incorporate these things into my life as well. Well, one study tells us that the number one thing, of course, is that people who are living long and are having really good lives, who are living in the blue zone regions, that they maintain strong relationships. And we know how important being in a healthy, wonderful relationship where we are connecting. And I'm not just talking about a love relationship or a romantic relationship, but just having those kinds of connections with people really do and does make all the difference in the world. The other thing that I thought was really, really interesting in a recent study is that these people, they commit to a morning routine. And what I've actually been trying to do recently is have a very, very specific morning routine. So for me, the first thing I do when I get up is that I turn on my therapeutic lights, because I'm one of these people, when the sun is not around in the winter, I have some issues with my mood. So I sit under my therapeutic lights for seasonal affective disorder for 30 minutes every single morning. Now, while I am under the lights, and you don't look at the lights directly, you look at the lights indirectly, I'm also doing a number of other things. I am doing some exercises, yes, at the same time. And I also have my free weights right next to me. So I am lifting weights. I'm doing some cardio exercises for my legs. Well, at the same time, I am deriving the benefits of the therapeutic lights for seasonal affective disorder. And I have been doing this for a very, very, very long time. And I can tell you that the light therapy for me, it has really, really made a big, big, big difference. So if you are like me, and when the fall and the winter season is upon us, and you're finding that your mood really is shifting, this is definitely something that I would recommend that you try. The other thing that they're talking about in this study is a nighttime routine. And that doesn't mean staying up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, watching movies or being on your computer. So finding a really nice routine to begin the day and also winding down the day, getting ready for hopefully a really wonderful sleep, is a great thing to incorporate into your day-to-day life. Now, the other thing, and I had never read this before, people who are living the longest around the world, they sit on the floor. And I'm just going to read you something that was in this study. It says some of the longest living people in the world are known to ditch the comfort of chairs and couches for floor sitting. And if you've ever sat on the floor in a cross-legged position, and hopefully you can do that, you're going to be flexible and mobile enough to do it. You know that getting up requires some serious muscle strength. So it makes sense that having to stand up from the floor multiple times a day reaps longevity benefits. So that's also something that you can try. And number five, and I thought this was interesting too, they mind their own business. They don't get involved with people in issues where they would be best to not. So again, you know, if we're looking at what works in our life, I think that we have to be mindful every single day of actually incorporating evidence-based findings into our life. And of course, in terms of food, they eat plant-based diets. They manage stress by gardening. And I find that for me, I manage stress by exercising and I play a lot of tennis. And if I'm also feeling really stressed out, I go up to my husband, Jim, and I'll say, Jim, I need 15 minutes of therapy. It's a great way to be able to express whether it's anxiety or worry or anything that is going on that is exacerbating or causing you to feel stressed out. And again, all the studies are so clear about the importance of physical activity and also the importance of having closely connected people in your life. And of course, there are some other things that I want to actually remind you about in terms of things that you can do every single day that are in your best interest. Again, we've talked about the importance of exercise, which can include weight training and yoga and meditation and massage. And what could be better at a different time of the day or even night, taking a really nice warm bath, anything that we need to do to help us to feel calm and de-stress. And of course, having supportive people in our life. And of course, you've heard me talk about this for years, is the importance of eliminating toxins. And of course, when Gary Nall talks about toxins, he typically talks about chemical toxins. When Beattie talks about toxins, I typically talk about toxic people and the importance of eliminating toxic people. And that oftentimes, unfortunately, means friends and family. You know, other things, I have found myself to be doing this more and more, and that is positive visualization. Let's say you're worried about something. You're not sure if you can complete the task, or you're going out on a date and you're feeling anxious and scared, and is she going to like me or is he going to like me? And just to be able to sit down in a comfortable place and just visualize positive imagery. And it is amazing how that visualization really does affect our moods. Also, dancing and listening to music and getting out into nature. These are all positive things that are free, that do not cost any money at all. And other studies have shown, and of course, I really, of course, believe this totally, is the importance of helping others and giving back. And I've been in private practice now for over 35 years. And when I think about when I graduated, did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill, it's been a number of years. And, you know, I have helped thousands of people in my practices in a variety of different cities where I've lived. And I have to tell you that what I have gotten back in the giving, I only hope that my patients can look back on the experiences that they have and the experiences that they've had with me and feel as gratified as I do in being able to help people. More and more people, certainly people in New York City and on the Upper West Side, where Jim and I live, you know, have dogs. And getting a dog, great company, great way to meet people. There is nothing better than coming home and having your little dog or cat, if you're a cat person, greet you at the door. So again, when I talk about empowering yourself and doing what is in your best interest, it is so important, my friends, to really be mindful every single day as you are navigating your life, whether or not you are doing the things that are really and truly in your best interest. And if you're not sure, and if you're finding that you are continuing to be in a downward spiral, that is the time to think about, and not just really think about, but reaching out and asking for some help, because it can be very, very, in quotes, comfortable to be living your life in a downward spiral where you are engaging in destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging behavior. And then, of course, you're wondering, why is my life not going well? Why am I not able to attract healthy people into my life? And of course, the real truth is, and I really believe this, is that you can't really love someone, that you can't really have a great and healthy relationship until you find ways to love yourself. And what I've discovered over the years in treating thousands of people is that the majority of people who are genuinely happy with their lives, you know, are not rich and famous and beautiful, nor were they immune from life's traumas and tragedies. And I have discovered that there is only one primary difference between those who wake up every morning thankful to be alive and those who are embittered about life and who are caught in this downward spiral of depression and anxiety and substance abuse of various different kinds or other psychiatric problems. And you know what that number one difference is? Well, the embittered group tends to complain incessantly about their difficulties and disappointments, and they blame everyone from their parents and friends and lovers and spouses for their unhappiness. The happier group also had their share of disappointments and trauma, but this happier group, they made a decision. And the decision was to take whatever steps are necessary to emotionally process what did and didn't happen in their lives that may have contributed to their problems, and that they are not committed to becoming victims of their circumstances. And these are the people who I see every single day who seek professional help when necessary. And these are the people, these are my heroes, people who've had a lot of trauma, a lot of tragedies in their life, but they are committed to tackling their problems head on. And guess what? Most really, really do succeed. Now, we're talking about resolutions, and just for fun, I was Googling resolutions and wanted to find out some recent research studies about, you know, do resolutions really, or do people really, you know, follow the resolutions that they are making, or whether or not the resolutions actually fall by the wayside. So studies show that within really a couple of weeks, the majority of people, they really do not follow through with the New Year's resolutions, or really most resolutions that they are making. And well, what are the consequences? The consequences, of course, is that nothing is going to change. So that if we are serious, and I think the real world is serious about making some changes in our life, we do have to be mindful, and we do have to be committed, and we do have to be self-disciplined, and we do have to practice the things, the routine, to keep us on a really positive path. And all of this takes a lot of determination, and it's about putting all of this into an action mode. And I wanted to tell you about three different situations that I am currently dealing with. And of course, I'm going to change the details to protect the confidentiality and anonymity of my patients. Patient number one, let's call her Barbara. Barbara is 55 years old. She is single. She has had a very, very, very difficult life, beginning with an abusive family. She was abused emotionally and physically and sexually. She had a number of different medical issues. And despite all of this, she managed to get a couple of different degrees, but in her love life basically has been a disaster. In fact, her love life really was a replay of her own family of origin, which, as I've mentioned, included abuse of every single kind. So at this point, 55 years old, she's never been married. She always wanted children. She is looking for love. So we were talking a couple of nights ago about her New Year's resolution. So she said, well, her work is going really well right now. Financially, she's in a really good place. But her number one priority is finding someone to love and somebody who is going to love her. So we talked about the strategy. What is she actually going to do? So I told her she needs to get back on one of the dating sites. She had a little bit of success with Match.com. And of course, these days, there's so many other dating sites and you need to do a little bit of research to figure out, you know, which dating site or dating sites that you would really like to, you know, commit to being on. So we're talking about, you know, a new year, a new action plan. So what is she doing? Well, she has not bothered to research the dating sites. She is now living in a new community where there are lots and lots of possibilities to meet people. But she has made the decision at this point that she is only going to socialize with older married couples. And as I was saying to her, say, look, if you are looking for love, you need to get on a dating site or two. You need to put yourself out there in the singles world, not in the old married couples world. And, you know, she was saying, well, yeah, I guess I really need to do this. And of course, the proof is in the pudding, and we're going to have to see whether or not she is going to be willing and able to pivot and begin to do the things that are actually in her best interest and maximize her opportunity and potential for finding what she says is the most important thing in her life, somebody to love and somebody who is going to love here. So again, it is about being mindful and not fooling ourselves and engaging in destructive or self-destructive or self-sabotaging behavior. So if you are in a situation like this, again, it is about asking yourself, being honest with yourself, being really, really mindful with yourself and making sure that if you have certain goals and you have certain wishes and you have certain hopes and certain dreams, that you are actually on a road, that you are actually on a trajectory where there is the possibility of maximizing those opportunities and potential so that you hopefully, if you're not going to get everything that you want, that you will then at least begin a process of getting some of the things that are really important to you. Then I want to tell you about another patient of mine. Her name is, let's call her Laura. Laura has also had a very, very unfortunate history of abuse, actually sexual abuse, sexual assault, rape. There's been a number of sexual traumas that this woman has sustained over many, many, many years. And she is in her early 50s as well. So this is her situation. Wanting to feel better, she contacted me with a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder that resulted as, you know, as a result of her sexual assault and sexual abuse over the years. So she was seeing a therapist for a couple of years. She thought, and she told me that she thought that she and this therapist, she's also in a relationship with a woman who she claims to love. The relationship, apparently, I haven't met her partner, has been, you know, relatively stable over a number of years. So she was in therapy with this therapist who was at least ostensibly trying to help her deal with the trauma, the multiple traumas that she had sustained over the years in the areas of sexual abuse and sexual assault. Now, apparently, 2 months ago, she went in for a session, a face-to-face session. And during the session, her therapist announced, seemingly, literally, out of the blue, that she felt that she could no longer be working with, well, my current patient. Now, my patient, as she told me, was in an absolute state of shock. She had no idea that there were any issues. She had no idea that there were any problems between her and her therapist. And here she is in the middle of talking about her trauma, in the middle of describing the sexual assault, the sexual abuse that she had sustained over the years with actually multiple men, where there had been betrayal of trust. Here, this therapist is announced that she can no longer see her. So this is a woman who I had actually treated a number of years ago, and I had not heard from her probably in 25 years ago. So I was very surprised. I was very surprised when I received the phone call from her. So we discussed in detail, you know, what had happened. Again, she was devastated. She was devastated by this betrayal. So a couple of days ago, she and I, we had a very, very in-depth conversation, and I had suggested that she file. This woman has a PhD in psychology. Obviously, this is somebody who should not be practicing, period, with anybody under any circumstances, in my professional opinion. So I had strongly suggested to her that she contact the licensing board of this particular psychologist, and that she file a complaint. And of course, the complaint would be investigated. She would be, you know, interviewed, and the process would actually move along. Now, you might say, well, maybe this is a little bit of an overreaction, but you have to understand that this is a woman who has seen herself and who has lived as a victim of her circumstances, of the sexual assault and sexual abuse for her entire life. And for her to file a complaint and really seek some justice for what happened. I mean, this is clearly a medical malpractice case. Would give her a sense of empowerment that would have wonderful ripples throughout her life. And it would be so helpful in terms of her being able to process her own past trauma. So we're talking about this, and my sessions typically go on for a lot longer than 60 minutes. I have never understood And I have never believed in the so-called 45-minute or 50-minute therapeutic hour. I think it is absurd. I think that by the time you say hello and by the time you pay, you've already cut into your time significantly. So my sessions and people who work with me know that I often, you know, will see people sometimes two or three and sometimes even longer at the beginning, consecutive hours. And what I have found and what my patients have found is this is extremely, extremely helpful, and it really does fast forward the process. So getting back to my patient, my new patient, and she's kind of humming and hawing, and she's not sure, and maybe she should go and she should talk to this woman, which I strongly, strongly did not recommend. She was thinking about writing a letter, and I said, no, I do not think this is the thing to do at all. And, you know, the question then becomes, you know, what will be in her best interest? And in her life, she has been used to, she has been accustomed to living her life in her relationships as a victim. So moving out of, in quotes, her comfort zone is something, certainly at this point, is something that it is very difficult, if not even impossible, for her to consider. But I am going to continue. I'm going to continue with her to encourage her to actually file a complaint against this therapist. I mean, there are rules, there are laws. You don't just drop a patient or a client in the middle of therapy. So obviously this therapist has a lot of issues, and I am hoping if this woman, my patient, is clearly interested in beginning, maybe for the first time in her life, to do what is in her best interest, that she is going to have to go out of her comfort zone. And it remains to be seen. And I will keep you posted. And if you are listening right now, and I know that she often listens to the show, I'm hoping that this is going to be a reminder that this is going to be something that's going to be very, very helpful. In fact, invaluable for your mental health and for being able to really move forward. And I'm going to tell you about the third situation, you know, where people have lived their lives in a miserable, miserable marriage for over 50 years. And I got a call probably about a month ago from a man. Now, usually when somebody is calling me for a couple therapy, it is usually the woman who is wanting and literally needing to drag in her partner or drag in her spouse. So this call came from a man. And he said that he and his wife, they have first marriage, only marriage, that they've been married for over 50 years, and that it's really been a disaster from the beginning. They have a number of children and grandchildren, and they've done pretty well financially and in their careers. But here they are, 50 years later, reaching out and wanting to see if they can actually have a happy marriage, because apparently, and you know, I've met with them several times now, the marriage, according to both, has really been a disaster, and that there have been few, if any, really happy moments. In fact, the wife had said to me privately that she actually had thought seriously about leaving the marriage within the first 6 weeks. So 50 years later. So with this particular couple, they are doing everything right. I had an initial couples evaluation, so I had a very, very clear picture about what went on and what did not go on with this couple beginning, right really from the beginning. And then I routinely meet with the people individually. So here you have two people, a man who had been abused as a child, a woman who had been made to feel worthless by both of her parents. And when she realized that she was in a really toxic situation very early on in her marriage, she did not feel worthy. She did not feel good enough. Her family was not going to support her. And so the years went by. And that is something that we always, always need to be aware of. And that is the passing of time. So what happened with this couple is that they really had, and you know, they were kind of surprised to hear me say this last week, but there was a deal. There was an unwritten, unconscious deal that both were going to be playing a certain role where she enabled his really disgusting behavior, abusive behavior at times. And so it went. But the good news is that these people, they are dealing individually with their own individual issues. And things, I've only been working with him now for a little over a month, things are actually starting to change with the couple, and we have not yet even begun the serious marital therapy work. So in dealing with the people individually, and you know, I was saying to the husband a couple of weeks ago, I said, when was the last time that you brought your wife some flowers? Or when was the last time that you said to your husband, I am so appreciative of what you've been able to provide for our family? And they looked at me individually. And of course, that was something that did not happen over the years. So 50 years later, I'm feeling so optimistic about this couple, and they are feeling so optimistic for the first time in their marriage that maybe as they, you know, go through the remainder of their lives, that they are going to be able to have a relationship that is loving, that is close, and that is even physical and sexual. And this was something else that both of them had said, that there had been no sex in the marriage for many, many, many years. So it depends on your mindset. You know, are you willing, again, my mantra, are you willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as you can issues that get in the way of your life? Are you willing, and are you committed to doing what is in your best interest? And if you need a guide, and if you need a coach, and if you need a therapist, do not hesitate to reach out and ask for help. Of course, you have to be very, very, very careful who you are working with. And I've said this for years, that all therapists are not the same, not all doctors are all the same, so that you have to be very careful in actually doing your homework. Well, talking about therapists and talking about therapy, there was a two-page story here in the New York Times this morning about what is going on in the world of therapy and therapists across the nation. The headline was, "We surveyed 1,320 therapists across the nation. And more Americans are desperate for support as the third year of the pandemic begins." And I'm just going to read you the first paragraph. And this was by Tara Parker Pope, a terrific writer, Christina Karen, and Monica Cordero Sancho. "So as Americans head into a third year of pandemic living, therapists around the country are finding themselves on the front lines of a mental health crisis. Social workers, psychologists, and counselors from every state say that they can't keep up with an unrelenting demand for their services, and many must turn away patients, including children, who are desperate for support." So what we're seeing here is that there certainly is a demand, and that the demand has surged. The survey, again, was with 1,320 therapists. The waiting lists are long Overall, 75% of respondents reported an increase in waiting lists. Medication needs have increased. Children's mental health issues are intensifying. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would have been like for my daughter to have been homeschooled, to not have any face-to-face interaction with other children when she was a little girl and going to school. And the study also found, of course, that couples are struggling. Nearly 75% of respondents said much of the time was spent helping clients with family and couple issues. So therapists are being pushed to their limits. More people of color are seeking support. It's a good thing. I think it's a good thing that we're all seeking support. The benefits of telemedicine are mixed. I mean, I must tell you that I only see three people in person, and I see them in my East Hampton practice. Every other person who I am treating, I am seeing them on Zoom, and even my New York City patients at this point, given what's happening with the surge, are much more comfortable, as am I, doing the therapy on Zoom. So, yes, I much prefer to see everybody in person, but the reality is what it is. And according to this study, the outlook for 2022 remains bleak. But I have, and I'm not a Pollyanna, as you all know, I have a very different take on this. And in fact, I wrote a letter to the editor, and hopefully this little letter is going to be printed, because what I see is that the pandemic has put mental health in the forefront, which I believe is a really, really good thing. I mean, after all, the actresses and the athletes and everybody seems to be coming out these days and talking about their depression and anxiety and breakups and relationship problems. So what the pandemic has done, it's really put mental health in the forefront, and I believe enabling and encouraging people to once and for all deal with their mental health issues. I think it is a really, really important thing. And whether or not the issues, you know, were caused or triggered or exacerbated by the crisis, I think that the pandemic, and I'm sure that none of us have probably even, you know, would ever think about the pandemic having any positives, but I think that this may be a silver lining that has come about as a result of the pandemic. I mean, we're seeing more and more people who I think would never in the past have reached out for help are being given permission. And I think being given permission in the media as well. And there's a lot of talk on television shows, streaming shows, and on various different advertisements about the importance of seeking mental health treatment. I remember when Michael Phelps came out and he talked about his own depression. And there was a quote here in the story that a lot more people who are Asian are looking for therapy who never did before. People are being more open about saying, I'm feeling scared, I'm feeling anxious. And I think that that is a really positive, important thing that is going on. Because years ago, when I think about when, you know, I was growing up in Winnipeg as a little girl, I mean, psychiatrists, I mean, you would think of psychiatrists and that people would be going to see a psychiatrist if they were crazy or if they were rich. And now this is all becoming much, much more mainstream. And what I'm just hoping, of course, is that millions of people who don't have insurance, who may not be U.S. citizens, are going to have the kind of access that they need to mental health services, and of course, all healthcare services as well. So again, you know, what does this have to do with you? Well, if you are struggling, whether or not the struggles were about the pandemic, whether the struggles were exacerbated by the pandemic, whether the struggles that you have were or had were triggered by the pandemic, this is a really, really, really good time in life. And I think it's always a good time to try to help yourself and acknowledge and address and resolve as best as you can the issues that get in the way of your life and your relationship. Well, moving on, and of course, I use the New York Times as a constant resource here on the Ask Beauty Show. So Sunday, this was January the 2nd, 2022, a really, really good story by a colleague of mine, Alex Strauss. And the headline, How to Make Romance a Priority in 2022. And this is what Alex Strauss says, and this is what she has found in interviewing a number of experts. Excuse me. For many people, romantic relationships have taken a back seat during the pandemic. Couples fell into routines that became a more casual way to relate to each other. The pandemic also accelerated people's vulnerabilities, their ineffectual communication skills, and their ability to disagree successfully. Okay, so what are some of these suggestions? Well, say goodbye to last year. Before couples can look forward to a positive new year, they need to have closure with one that ended, said Julie Schwartz Gottman. We all know about the Gottman Institute. And I think that that's a really nice thing that couples can say. However, I look at this somewhat differently. I think that it is very difficult to live in the moment unless you have been able to figure out in your life what has worked and what hasn't worked. So in order to be able to say goodbye to last year, I think that couples need to sit down and say to themselves something like this. You know, where do you think that we are right now? Do you think that we have some skeletons in the closet or unfinished business from last year, from many years before, that we really need to work through and talk about before we are then able to move on and say goodbye to last year? Okay, I think it's important to do this kind of an evaluation on a very, very regular basis. In that way, you always stay connected to your partner and you always know what your partner is feeling about you and about your relationship. So it's fine to talk about moving forward, but if there are issues, if there are some old issues, whether or not they're a year old or 10 years old or 50 years old, these issues do need to be revisited and worked through as best as they can, even though we cannot change our history. And then they talk about, well, say hello to the new year. All right, so we had not such a great year or not such a great number of years. What are some of the things, and this is what I recommend to couples, what are some of the things that you would like to do and that I would like to do moving forward now that we understood what happened and what didn't happen in our past number of years together? To bring us closer and to revitalize our relationship. It may mean walking together. It may mean dancing. It may mean talking together. It may mean scheduling some rituals that we can actually look forward to on, if not a daily basis, then a weekly basis. And then they talk about, well, say hello to each other. And I think this is a really wonderful paragraph here. It says, we tend to only talk when we think that something is wrong. And that's why it's important couples commit to finding time to check in with each other to see how each person is doing and if their needs are being met. So one of the psychologists that was referenced in this story, a Dr. Cutlip, he recommended that couples meet twice a month for 20 minutes at the same time and place, ideally in a quiet location at home. Couples should put these meetings in their calendars. Say something positive to begin the conversation. Well, I think that twice a month for 20 minutes, I mean, if that works for you, that's a good thing. I know that with me and with my husband, Jim, if something is off, I don't want to wait for twice a month. And if the conversations need to take an hour, and if they need to take place every day, then so be it. So that each couple really needs to figure out for themselves what it is that they need to do to stay connected. And when things start to get off track, how important it is to not avoid or deny or kick the dog or find yourself just immersed in the computer and work and television shows, but rather to be able to say, listen, you know, I'm really upset with you, or I'm really disappointed, and I have some things that I would like to talk with you about. When would be, not next month or not twice a month, but when would be a good time today, or maybe later on tonight, that we can have some quiet time to begin to talk about what happened today, what happened yesterday. And if you do it in this kind of a way, things do not tend to build up. Unfortunately, because of inadequate and poor communication and problem-solving skills, people will go for years and years, like this couple who've been married for 50 years, and that they never really talk about the issues. And as a result, nothing ever really gets resolved. So whether or not we are talking about relationships, love relationships, romantic relationships, family relationships, collegial relationships, or friend relationships, it is just so important if you are going to have a genuine, open, and honest relationship with anyone that we deal with the good, the bad, and the ugly in a timely and in a really respectful way, which actually takes me, and I'm looking at the clock here, it's amazing, the time really does go fast, which takes me to another article that I found a couple of days ago, which is The Gift of Validation in Relationships, and how important it is to hear and to listen what the other person really has to say. Because validating the feeling of others, whether or not you agree or disagree, is a key to relationship success. Because validating others' thoughts and feelings is a foundational part of effective relationships. It is critical to all kinds of relationship patterns, including spouses and friends and family members and beyond, and mutual validation. And that is when both partners take steps to validate the other, because this is not about being right or wrong. It is a core feature of any truly loving and healthy relationships. And I want to quickly give you an example. know, somebody, your partner, for example, will say that I'm feeling really angry at what you said or what you did. It is so easy to be able to invalidate that statement and say, look, you're overreacting and it's not something that I did. And maybe this reminds you of your mother or your grandmother. And when you have that kind of response, that only does separate the two people. And it is then impossible to be able to resolve issues. And a positive response, of course, would be, you know, I hear what you're saying. I see it differently, but, you know, I really want to understand why you are feeling that what I said or what I did was hurtful. That opens up the lines of healthy communication. And I think this is something that we should really be talking about on future Ask Beattie shows, the importance, the gift of validation in relationships, and that being right and making your partner or friend or lover or family member wrong is a sure way to never be able to foster healthy and loving relationships. Well, again, I cannot believe I have all these other things that I wanted to talk with you about, but we're going to have to, you know, save the discussion for another show. I want to thank you all so much again for tuning in. I love doing the Ask Beattie shows. And, you know, as I've said multiple times over the years, I really hope that there is some little thing that I say or that my guests have said that can really make a positive difference in your life, that there is a takeaway, that it's not just about listening to an interesting show, but what I hope is that there is some impact that can really foster better relationships, better mental health in your own life and in the life of your loved ones. So I want to leave you for 2022 with the same messages that I've been leaving you since 2013 when I first began hosting the Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And of course, the first message is that I want you, and I hope you really do take this in, I want you to do everything possible to be mindful of doing things that are really in your best interest. And that equates to loving yourself. And if you're finding that you are continuing to stand in your own way, I hope that I can convince you to reach out and ask for good professional help. It can make all the difference in the world. And secondly, the world is in a crazy place, not just with the pandemic, so that we all need to be committed. And again, committed is the key word here, to doing a much better job in learning to love each other, care for each other, and nurture one another. And if we do these things, individually, we are going to be in a much better place. And culturally and as a society, there is no question that we are going to see a lot more positivity and love and peace and justice throughout the world. So again, thank you so much again for listening in. Happy and healthy new year. And next Monday and every Monday from 3 to 4 live Eastern Standard Time here on the Progressive Radio Network. So have a good rest of the day. Love yourself, love each other, and I'll talk with you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.